Here's the funny thing. Has the stock market ever dropped?
Yes.
Has it crashed multiple times?
Yes.
If you bought Facebook stock, does it stay the same every single day?
No.
So why is it that when it comes to apartment investing, you expect 100% green?
Right.
That's the number one topic that I feel like people somehow think like we have some sort of magic bullet. We're not fallible to any market conditions, which is not the case. However, I do recognize that the biggest key to a successful apartment investment or syndication or any real estate in general is buying the right property with the right loan.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of speaking with Palmy Kitty. Now, Palmy forms a duo of called the Kitty Sisters, and they are syndicators, entrepreneurs, and they're also educators, and they have big dreams to help other people achieve financial freedom. They have over $300 million of multifamily apartment syndication portfolio, and they're just passionate about helping others and making sure that they are really creating a life for themselves that they are passionate about and creating financial freedom. They've also written a couple of books, I believe, and so I'm really pumped and excited to have Palmy on the show to share her incredible story and her insights into the world of syndication. But enough of me. Let's get her out here. G'day, Palmy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And we were just talking a little bit in the green room. Your sister couldn't join us today, right? You're a duo.
Yeah, unfortunately, she's on assignment. And so this is actually the first time ever I've done an interview without her. So.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm jealous. I love having two people on the show, you know, a founder and co-founder or whatever, two sisters. So I'm sure we all want to hear the story of how you and your sister got started. But just before the audience, are you actual twins or are you just
sisters?
We're
not twin sisters, but we are actual biological sisters.
Gotcha. I just wanted to make sure. So for everyone watching on YouTube, you can see in the background and your last name actually is Kitty, right? K-I-T-T-I. So it's not a weird thing that they're like,
I didn't know. It's not like just made it up or something.
Yeah, right. But before we get into your story, let's rewind the clock and start at the beginning. Tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid.
So I went to the supermarket. It was me, my sister, and an older friend. So we decided we wanted to make some extra cash from my parents had a small business. So we wanted to make extra cash. So we went to the supermarket and we bought like bags of nuts. I think it was like peanuts. Yeah, actual peanuts with shells. So we bought a big bag of it and we're like, we're going to break it down to small little bags and we're going to go sell it to every single person. So I don't know if it was my business acumen that got the sales or they were just sort of like felt compelled because, you know, the boss's daughter coming around. And like, I think I was probably in the fourth grade. So maybe like 8, 9. It's like, hey, buy this. So we ended up selling probably about 30 bags and the rest my mom bought. So that was probably like, that was my first experience making a couple bucks.
That's awesome. No, it's always good for mom and dad to give the neighbors or the customers, here's 50 cents, go appease the little kids and then buy their peanuts. That's awesome. Walk us through the journey of coming into entrepreneurship. I assume you just didn't wake up one day and you're like, I'm going to go do this.
Yeah.
So what was your journey into this world?
Oh, so interestingly, my parents were business owners since the beginning, since I was born, before I was born. So it was sort of like in my blood to assume that I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Growing up, I kept hearing them. They never really pushed education. So they never said like, you need to get these grades. I don't think they've ever even checked my report cards ever, actually. But I knew that I had to do well in school just because sort of like it was a thing, right? We went to a good school. All the kids were studying. So that's sort of like the assumed progression. But at home, my dad isn't highly educated. He has a fifth grade education and he was a very successful businessman. So I always felt like I'm going to be a business owner because that is the, you don't have to have a degree to show that you're great at something. And so I felt like I always knew that I wanted to go into business myself. And he always sort of poo-pooed the idea of being an employee because that was his path. So I think like we were all kind of grew up in that environment that felt like, hey, that was our path.
Gotcha. No, that's really interesting. So you didn't actually have a corporate career before
syndication? No, so I had a job right after college for 6 months, and I was selling industrial bakery software.
Wow. Okay.
Very weird. Yeah, it was horrible job. I was very bad at it. So for context, in the United States, the East Coast, and I didn't know this until then, the East Coast love bakeries. There's like way more concentration of bakeries in the East Coast. West Coast, not so much. Guess where they assigned me? The West Coast. Had no sales for 6 months. It was terrible. That was my only, it was a small business. So that was my only experience being an employee.
And then what was the lure or the desire to get into apartment syndication and, or just real estate in general? Did you start, you know, single family, or did you go straight into the big stuff?
So I actually, my sister and I actually started a fashion business before real estate. So right after college, that little stint, and then like she coincidentally went to Australia to study abroad for 6 months. When she came back, then we sort of tried to figure stuff out. So we borrowed her $2,000 and we started this fashion business. We grew it to seven figures with just the two of us as the employees, or you know, people in the business. It did really well. So we were manufacturing clothing for a lot of big brands. It did really, really well. So well that we forgot about, hey, we need to think about the future, about passive income, about saving. We were just spending money as it was coming in. We were just lucky that we had more coming in than we were spending. And all that changed overnight when our biggest client announced that they were going to shut down all their retail stores. So we went from this high life of like wild spending. I mean, like we didn't buy Lambos, but we definitely could have afforded. But it went from like that kind of like growth, and all of a sudden just went, so that was like our first, as adults, that was our first shock. Like, oh, this stuff that we hear on TV, like, you know, like the rich and famous, that's just like some, what happened to them now? Where are they now? Like that kind of, it flashed. Not only was I concerned about like our financial being, but I was also thinking like, man, so we're going to become those statistics of people who like made it, but they weren't careful with their money. And then they lost it all. And that was like, that was a turning point that we needed to pivot from fashion. We tried to figure out like, what is something else that we can do that can't be outsourced, that can't be, that we are able to determine our worth and our price. In fashion, we are manufacturers. Basically, they told us, let's say, like this blouse, let's say, they would say, I'm going to pay you $5. You go figure out how to make it work. Legally, compliance, all that stuff. Like, I don't care. It needs to be above board, but you need to figure it out. In apartments, it's the opposite. If the apartment doesn't make them, cannot create the kind of financial rewards that we want, we don't buy it. So that was a complete switch. After fashion, after that business collapse, we got into the flipping business because we lived in Los Angeles. And it was, we didn't know that there's real estate outside of LA. We were in a very LA bubble. So we started flipping in LA. It was great. It made great money. But it was also really tiring because we had to deal with the contractors, the city, the whole thing from buying to selling. That's when my sister Nancy heard a seminar was happening about real estate. So we went to it, and she was like, we got there and they were explaining about this multifamily stuff. We're like, wait, we can buy multifamily at that scale? At first, we used to think like duplex, triplex, but no, these people are talking about like 100 unit apartments. So then we started putting money as passive investors in a couple of deals because we're like, wow, so Dallas is awesome, isn't it? Okay, let's invest in Dallas. After that, because flipping was so really tiring, we were like, hey, should we do this actively? So that's how we got into apartments actively.
Gotcha. So, and how many flips did you have in LA?
We had 8.
Okay. Yep. And it's interesting, the fashion world, that you just completely, once it collapsed, was there any sort of desire to like revive it and make it more, you know, resilient, that it's not reliant upon just one, you know, one supplier, or sorry, one buyer, I should say?
So in the fashion business, especially on the manufacturing side, people may be surprised that like some of the biggest brands are horrible at paying their vendors. It's an epidemic. Like, it happens a lot. We were lucky that some of the vendors, we selected vendors that we felt like we can trust because we're putting out a lot of money up front. Some POs may be like $800K. And that's like our own money that we're putting on the line to hire these factories to buy the fabric and all the supplies. So there's a lot of shady characters in the fashion business. We stuck around long enough just because, like I said at the beginning, we didn't know there was an alternative. And once that trust, like this is the best client we could have found, and that like even they could have, you know, like their business can go down and we had no control over it. We're like, this isn't the right business for us anymore. I don't want to go chase. There's can I fly? Can I choose from to do manufacturing from country A? Then now I have to go try to find another factory in a different country. I don't want to do that. I don't want to fly around all over the world.
Look, as an outsider, you know, it sounds like you had like a really good thing going and, yeah. you know, trying to then, I'm sure there would have been a bit of remorse and grief when you realize like this baby that you built with you and your sister and now you're like, it's not worth anything. Or you know, it might be worth something, but it's not like it could vanish overnight very quickly. You know, it's a stark reality that a lot of people can face. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the nuts and bolts of the conversation today. I know we spoke in the green room a little bit about you wanting to talk about, you know, just how busy syndication has become, or more accessible, I should say. Mm-hmm. So walk us through your perspective of what you've seen being in the business and you know, how it's evolved in the time that you've been doing apartment syndication.
Before I got really involved with multifamily syndications, I really thought real estate investing involved just buying single family homes. And even if you're really lucky, maybe duplex and triplex. And so you sort of like work your way up, personal guarantees, maybe you're self-managing, or even best case, you hire a property management company, but they still require some input from you. That's what I used to think real estate investing was. And that was until we got into this world of multifamily that I realized that isn't necessarily the best path, but it's the path that people always think is an option because they think, hey, I need all the control. Well, they may not even know multifamily's apartment is possible to buy, because who would to think that like someone like us can go buy like almost $100 million multifamily apartment? And I feel like in some ways, because it's accredited investors or sophisticated investors that have to invest, that are allowed by rule to invest in these deals, this opportunity has been sort of behind lock and keys. Only some people had access to that knowledge base. Like syndication or basically apartment investing isn't new. There's a whole bunch of very, very rich families who've been doing this for years. Just regular people who just started 5.5 years ago, like Nan and I, that's not possible for us before. And the people who we talk to, our passive investors, probably 80 to 90% would say, I didn't even know this was possible until I met you guys.
Mm. Yeah. Well, the big change of all that was 2012 when the Jobs Act changed, yeah, right? Exactly. That's had a huge impact. And that's also had an impact on pricing today. So how have you seen it in the last couple of years where syndication has now got a bit of a bad name, you know, because it's you know, there's been some failures. There's some blood on the street right now. We're recording here in June of 2024. There has been some big headlines of gurus out there who've been, you know, been tied to massive failures, and retail investors are spooked. And I don't want to be doom and gloom, but that's the reality of what we face today.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting topic. Here's the funny thing. Has the stock market ever dropped?
Yes.
Has it crashed multiple times?
Yes.
If you bought Facebook stock, does it stay the same every single day?
No.
So why is it that when it comes to apartment investing, you expect 100% green?
Right.
Like, no. Honestly, that's the number one topic that I feel like people somehow think like we have some sort of magic bullet that we're not fallible to any market conditions, which is not the case. However, I do recognize that the biggest key to a successful apartment investment or syndication or any real estate in general is buying the right property with the right loan. Mm-hmm. Like that product needs to match. All the negativity that you're hearing right now are mismatched between what they bought and the loan product that they attached to it. Multifamily in the right market, real estate in the right market will always go up in value given enough time.
Yep.
And historically, it's been proven that you can go look through history, we studied since 2000s, every single economic recessions that's happened all the way up to the pandemic. And you see what happened is the low that drops, the next high within 2.5 years, it goes up back higher than that previous high. So every time there's an incremental, there'll be wherever we were at 2022, in 2-3 years, the next high will be way higher. And that just means that, hey, everything ebbs and flow. Don't freak out. The valuation of multifamily only matters 3 times, when you buy, if you refi, and when you sell. So if you have the right product in place and you have the right capital reserve in place and you did this correctly, just hold on to the property a little bit longer. No harm, no foul.
Yeah, look, you are correct. It is most of the blood we're seeing on the street today is a function of cheap debt, right? Mm-hmm. And cheap debt went from nearly 0% interest rates up to 5.5%. That doesn't seem like a big jump, but when you're going from zero, that's 5.5-fold, right? Yeah. 500%. That's a huge swing, right? You've gone from paying a 4% interest rate to nearly 9%, and you didn't have, you know, correct parameters in place. It can be it can hurt. And obviously, as higher interest rates go up, you know, asset values go down. Right. So it is an ebb and flow. And I 100% agree with you. I think the problem we've found with the negativity around the syndication space was treating it like, and the other thing I'll say is that one, real estate isn't a stock ticker, right? You can't go and value your asset every single day to see it go up and down like Apple. Mm-hmm. And two, people were starting to treat apartment complexes like fix and flips. You have obviously been in a fix and flip, and they're trying to get in, get out for 3 years, get cheap debt, get high risk loans, and you know, we'll be out.
Yeah.
Historically, real estate has been a medium to long term investment, right? And I come from Australia, where I know growing up, my dad was like, if you double your money every 10 years, you're doing just fine. You know, from a real estate investment philosophy, you know what I mean?
10% per year, not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, I think at least on a 7 year hold, if you double it every year, I think it's, double every 7 years, you're roughly about a 13% IRR or something like that, or 12% IRR. So what I'm trying to get at is that I think there's been the way in which people have been treating it. Now, the other thing I'll say is, and I've been in this for a decade now, it's a busy bloody lane. You know what I mean? Like, it's so busy right now. And back when there was, you know, in 2014, when I got started, it was you could get 7 caps and 8 caps where interest rates were at 5.
Yeah.
But that was because there wasn't many people in the, you know, in the space, right? Now there's more people. That's created more certainty, and thus that's created a lower cap rate. So, you know, yield, it's still a very good investment over the long term. But, and I'm sure I'd love to hear your philosophy on this, you can't treat it like a flip. You have to be patient. And I think that's what you're trying to get at, right? You can't just be like, oh gosh, something's going on in the market, panic. You'd be like, got to ride this out. It'll be okay. Let's give ourselves some more time and we'll get out the other side.
I totally agree with you. It's sort of like we're the victim of our own success. So when you started, I wish I knew about apartments in 2014. Those would have been an amazing time. But like the reality is like, today, I think it may not be a complete reset to 2014, but there is people follow the herd, right? So when they kept hearing, oh, people are making a lot of money in multifamily, then all these gurus started coming in, all these students started coming in. They, in some ways, they probably, at least on the lower tier purchase prices, they probably kind of screwed up the purchase price. It just ramped up because they were just buying stuff, not really knowing what they're doing. And so, but today, I feel like in 2024, I think there's some sort of there.
Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the 3 reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below.
Is a market reset. Prices have dropped, not as a function of performance of the property. The underlying asset probably is doing well, but because of interest rate, people can't afford to purchase the property at the same value. So a lot of people are on the sideline. I think yesterday, now people are starting to get back into it. KKR is putting like $1.8 billion into apartments and other people as well. So they're coming back, guys. So before they do, it's time that you start buying before they get like, you know, they're going to come, they're coming back. And once that happened, a lot of these properties that we're getting at 20, 30% discount today will not be that price anymore.
100%. I will say last 18 months, end of 2022, obviously was just no action. 2023 was a very quiet year, but this first 6 months, we just had a state of the market webinar for our investors. So big plug. If you're listening to this for podcast, I'm sure scroll up or scroll down. We were going to produce it on the podcast as well. But we were talking about that, we haven't been pencils down at all. We've actually bought three properties in that time because we want to keep – if you wait for the KKR headlines to hit, you're too late. Like, you need to be underwriting deals today to understand – in real time, like as interest rates were going up, we were continuing to underwrite deals, and see how those market, the purchase cap rates started to really expand, particularly in like a market like Phoenix or Central Texas. Yeah. I was like, wow, no, this is going like, and all of a sudden, yeah, within 6 months, I'm like, I saw this deal 6 months ago. Now they want a 25% discount. I'm gonna buy it. Like, you had to act right then. But then on the other hand, you know, we also fish from the same pond. We've got retail investors, and when they're like in multiple capital calls and, you know, they're losing equity and value, it's a little bit of a pullback. So
they're,
you know,
spooked, right?
They're spooked, right. And I want to ask you your question. I've got an answer to this, but are you doing anything differently to try and diversify your investors to, you know, those people who have been spooked in the last quarter, 5 years, who've been investing in this space and now sort of like, oh, I need to take a break, or I need to sit on the sideline. Are you doing anything different to attract the newer crop, so to speak?
With our existing group, we try to educate them and try to like having a similar conversation that we're having now, just explain to them like there's ebbs and flow to everything and like you're not going to bat 100%. As far as new investors, like, as any syndicator knows, like, that's your lifeblood. So you're always constantly bringing in new people into the system. So while we want to nurture and grow basically the book of business we have with our current investor list, we also are always driving new investors to come into the group as well. And I would just say, like, a lot of people, the negative experience that they're having now isn't really deterring them. It's just a function of like, my money's tied into deals. I can't invest more. So I think like everything else, like, and I give the stock market example a lot because I see it all the time. Everyone's like, I'm never going back. And then all of a sudden you look back like, why are you still, what? You just put more stock into Tesla? It's like, same thing. People are going to, we're emotional creatures. We hunker down because we fear what we don't know. But once things start turning, they're going to be back.
As emotional creatures, we're also very forgetful, right? You know, look at all the recessions, right? Yeah. Recessions don't repeat themselves, but they do rhyme. Mm-hmm. Most it's because of human greed, let's be honest. That's what it boils down to. And some sectors got too greedy and, you know, it has a reset. And that's all because we're imperfect human beings, right? So, no, it's very, very true. And continuing to have a conversation with your investors in real time, I think, is important, and continuing to show data. But I do think it's a great, it's a fantastic buying opportunity. Like, on the presentation I said the other night, I've toured five properties in the last 6 weeks that are all at or below debt numbers that they purchased for two and a half years ago.
Yes, and yes, I've heard that.
And I'm talking to the guy and he's like, complete equity wipeout. And I feel bad. Like, I'm like, oh, that's terrible. Like, I don't want to wish that upon anyone. But when you think of the types of deals you can be getting right now. Now, yes, rent growth is a little soft, but it's, you know, you're going, you know, I'm telling my investors, this is not we're not getting into this for 3 years. Like, we always set 5 year business goals. We're going to be going the distance. Like, we're putting 5 year debt on it. Just sit back. Your money's going to be fine. And, you know, you might make a 12 IRA. We might make an 18. You know, we'll give you a range. So, are you seeing anything else in the market today that is really like enticing you to get back in the pool, so to speak?
So here's the thing, like, in the right areas, like for instance, Dallas, right? The stats show is that there's 400 people moving to Dallas every single day. In Atlanta, where we have properties, there's 104 people moving to Atlanta every single day. The fact is, there's key macroeconomic things that are happening that are all indicators that multifamily will do really, really well going forward. There's a huge affordability gap when it comes to home purchase price versus rent. People cannot afford to buy homes anymore. And you would think that interest rate hikes would have impacted it. In Los Angeles, home value is probably close to $1 million now. Like, I was walking by some really junk property recently, and they were selling for $900,000-something. Junk. It's pretty much a teardown. So the fact is, the first thing is, people can't afford to be homeowners anymore. They're going to be lifelong renters. Second thing is, there's positive net migration to a lot of these areas. Basic supply and demand tells you that there's not enough products coming online. Construction has come to a halt. There are some products coming online that are almost at the finish line. New projects are being halted because of the capital constraints. They can't borrow money or the cost is too high from when they purchase the property. And the other thing that I think is really important for people to understand is like, we were sort of blindsided by the interest rate hikes, right? It was like, when we were assuming, or the scenario people were assuming was 3+ interest rates, okay, maybe 4. Today, it's a complete opposite. It's like we're in the light. We see everything. We're not walking blindly. Whatever your rent growth assumptions are, you know that today. Probably is the worst case scenario, right? So you're not going to underwrite something that isn't happening. You're underwriting based on today's reality. And I believe today's reality is at the bottom of the market. Thus, if it works in today's horrible environment, imagine when things starts picking up and that's actually improving. What will it do to your assumptions? It's going to be like 10, 15, 20, 30% better.
What you're trying to say there is a lot of people, and I've been a beneficiary of this, is compressing cap rates. You know, we all bought, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago at 6.5, 7 caps, and I sold them at 5 caps or 4 caps. You know, like those numbers are going to work, right? Today, we're back at those 5.5, 6 caps. I don't think it's prudent to underwrite cap rate compression in your model, but knowing you'll underwrite a cap rate expansion, saying the market's going to get worse.
Yeah.
But you know that if interest rates drop, the cap rate's going to drop and you're going to benefit, right? But you don't underwrite to that, but you know that there's a back, to your point, that the lights are on. We all know, we've seen that, we've gone up the roller coaster and down the other side again. And I think, yeah, you learn and you now make assumptions that are market aligned. And I think today, like I know for us, we're not doing a ton of market growth and rents at all.
Yeah.
Our strategy today is unfortunately to pick up deals that people have put multiple millions of dollars in, and now we're getting those value add for free. And we're just looking at getting the positive leverage on cap rates going in versus interest rates, and just hold it for 5 years. We'll just fine. You know, the money would you do just fine. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like if you think about it, like. At the beginning, I call it like the 5 stages of multifamily grief. So first stage was like, I need to make 2x returns, like, or else I'm never selling. Then you got to, okay, 1.8. Okay, I'll take it. And then all of a sudden it came down to like, okay, make a little bit of money. It's okay, right? Not going to lose our investors' money. And then we went to a fourth stage, which was like neutral. Wealth preservation, break even, and we'll sell. Today, we're in the fifth and last stage where people are like, how do I preserve the most amount of capital for our investors and not have them lose their entire investment in the deal? And like you said, I definitely have sympathy for people who were impacted by that. I truly do. I am a passive investor in deals that have capital call as well. So I totally understand that. But at the same time, you buying that property had nothing to do with them losing that money. I mean, they're going to lose it anyway. Either they lose to you and they maybe give a little bit back to their LPs, or they're going to have it foreclosed and the bank takes everything.
Mm-hmm.
So like their decision to not have a misalignment of loan products, maybe they didn't know, it's not on you. So there's nothing that you did that would have impacted them selling. It already was on, like you can't save that deal for them.
No, look, you're right, but it doesn't, as an operator, if you're going through that, like, and let's be frank, I know a lot of operators who are, it's still a chilling thing that you've got into a position where you're responsible for people's capital and you're in this position where you've got to tell them, hey, your money might be wiped out today. Like you as a human who has an ounce of credit, you know, dignity, you feel like shit. Like it's the worst feeling. It's probably the same feeling that you had when you realized, oh my gosh, my number one buyer just doesn't want to buy anymore. You know, like it's that sinking feeling. So no, I appreciate you saying that. Today I think back to the point of the show and this underlying theme is that there's opportunities out there right now, right? And it's just keeping your eye. So let's pivot as we come to the end of the show. What are you doing now, between now and the end of the year? What's your goals? What are you trying to do? Are you looking at more deals? Like what's the sort of the Kitty Sisters type of philosophy right now?
So basically right now we're focusing on opportunistic purchase of existing multifamily apartments. If like similar to what you said, if we're buying it below the debt from like a couple years ago, that would be a great deal. But we're also doing new developments. I am very, very bullish on BTRs, built to rents. So we're actually building 118 townhomes right now in a city that's sort of very close to McKinney, Plano, that kind of area. So we're building that. We're getting started on a new development project for single family homes as well. That's going to happen later this year. I think like, as we look at the multifamily space, we just wanted to see like, hey, where can we extract the highest level of value? And we saw nothing better than buying dirt and then turning it into gold. So that's what we're doing on the multifamily side, on the investment side. Also, we're really excited about teaching people how to raise money the way that we've done it, the way we've grown and continue to grow our investor list, outside of the traditional sort of like handshake, Zoom meetings, all that kind of like stuff. So that's our focus for right now. Those are the cool things that we're very excited about.
Awesome. I'm excited to see you guys grow. And the fact that you're in Los Angeles, and I'm also in Los Angeles, we should definitely meet up for a coffee and say g'day. But at the end of every show, we like to dive into the top five investing tips. This is a lightning round. I haven't told you the questions yet, but are you ready to get into it?
All right. Okay.
Question number one is, what's a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
Walking my dogs.
Walking your dog. So wait. If you're not watching you guys on YouTube, you've got Kitty photos and your last name's Kitty. Do you have cats?
Dogs.
Yeah.
People think we're cat people. I know. That's a bait and switch. No. So no one ever asks, and people like literally assume that we love cats.
Again, if you're watching us on YouTube, and you should subscribe on YouTube, is Palmy in the background has pictures of cats, which would go with the brand and her last name. But that's hilarious that you choose to own dogs. That's so funny. Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
Professionally, I think like I have a friend who's guided me. He has like 10,000 plus units. And every time I need some advice or even recommendations or referrals, he's the first person I call. And I'll call him and I'll ask him like, hey, what should I do with this? You've seen it before. So I would say his name's Charlie. So I would say Charlie is like professionally the person that's influenced our decision. And he's also the person that always encourages us to 10 times. So he's part of like strategic coaching and he's from that family of trees. So he would always tell us like, no, you're here, but you can 10X that. So what are you doing to 10X it? So he pushed the limits of what's possible. We went from our first property purchase at 6.9 million. The last one that we purchased was 77 million. And so we just met him not long ago. And he was like, so you went from raising a couple million dollars to the last project you raised $38 million. So you've 10X. You've done what he told us to do. His philosophy is never ending improvements. And so that's something that I always want to think about.
Awesome stuff. Well, Charlie, you're Palmy's most influential person in her career. Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? Now, when I say tool, it could be a physical tool like a journal or a phone, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
Yeah, I think Monday.com definitely is. We have a lot of employees that are, well, all our employees are remote. And because we have so many different aspects of our business, it's very, very difficult to just go through emails. Like if anyone ever emails me and I don't reply, I apologize ahead of time because I'm terrible at it. Everything has to be done through Monday because that's the easiest way to locate projects where someone at. You don't have to call and ask them like, hey, are you done? You can see it's done.
Yep. No, our team is entirely remote as well here in the States, but we use Slack. But good stuff. Monday.com is a great one. Question number four, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? What did you learn from that failure?
Because we started the fashion business with just two of us, a lot of times we hesitate and we're not from the corporate world. So like proper structure, SOPs, all that stuff, we're not very good at. And so we are probably about 5 to 10 employees behind today. Mm-hmm. Our growth could have been substantially, Nan and I are our own bottlenecks. We have so many different ideas, but we can't fulfill them because we don't have the team in place.
It's a good one. I've seen it on both sides of the fence, and you don't hire too quickly, you hire too quick, it can also hurt you. So it's about sustainable growth, I think, at the end of the day, but I love it. Last question too is, where can people reach you to continue the conversation that will be in your sphere? Where do they go?
Yeah, so the Kitty Sisters, you can go to YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. So it's K-I-T-T-I Sisters, Nancy and I. We also have an upcoming challenge that teaches people how to raise money. If you're interested in that, go to jumpstartapartments.com, jumpstartapartments.com, and you can get more intel on that.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, Pami, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of the day. I want to reflect what a couple of things I took away from today's show. I think you're right about having conversations with investors about the real-time status of an investment. And like what you said earlier about the stock market, it does go up, it does come down. Apartments and investing, any investing is going to have its ebbs and flows, and trying to ride it out and understand that is really, really important. And being in a position to communicate effectively with your investors is key. The second thing I took away from today's show is also understanding where we are in the market cycle, right? It is a great time to be buying, and people should be out there. You shouldn't be waiting for KKRs and the Blackstones of the world to get their headlines. You need to be going today. The last thing, obviously, I took away from today's show, you're a dog lover, so freaking awesome. But did I leave anything? Did I leave anything out?
No, those were it. I really had a really fun time. I love having podcasts where we can go deep on a conversation. This is perfect. I love it. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, look, my pleasure. It's I'm an engineer, geeky nerd at the end of the day that can just want to unpack everything and put it back together again. But again, Pami, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the rest of the rest of the day, and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Pami. Remember, go check her out and her sister, Nancy. You can Google Kitty Sisters, that's K-I-T-T-I Sisters, and you can also go to jumpstartapartments.com to find out a little bit more about what they're doing. They're based here in Los Angeles. Hopefully we'll get to meet up with those girls here in the future. Again, I want to thank you all for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ, because it's what we're all about here on the show. If you like this show, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your friends about it. Tell your mum about it. Tell your dad about it. Tell your dog or your cat about it. And we're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.